right, 3, 2, 1. You're
welcome
rolling
to another edition of the Grappling Cooperative, your favorite wrestling, grappling, tag team, singles, triple threat podcast. We cover it all. Four corners matches, three corners matches, two corner matches. They call that a line match. just fighting on a balance beam. I'm your host, John the Nature Boy Westhoff. I'm joined by my co-host and Comedy Suplex creator, the Viggity, a.k.a. the Peach Machine, a.k.a. the Pink Crippled. Viggity, how's it going?
I think that's a little racist. I don't think you got to go after my skin color. To call me the Pink Cripple.
You've gone full... I mean, I know you've gone a little orange at times, but I didn't know you'd gone full pink.
Hey, call me a rainbow cripple. No, I don't care.
No, I don't care. Get racist. You know, that's fine.
my dad was with me when I got the cast, and there was like five color options. It was like black, blue, purple, white, and pink. And my dad just looks at me and goes, well, I know which color you're getting.
I'll also tell another funny story. Just listening to two podcasts ago that was done, told that exact same story on the podcast already. I knew it. You're always defiant. That was the line.
That's my favorite part, the defiant part.
That there was a standing order, no pink in the Velton household. Defiance.
My dad and I were having lunch the other day, and we were talking about shit that went down when I said, Dad, you should never have left us home alone at all. We were terrible. He's like, nah, I knew everything you guys did. And I was like,
and you
bullshit.
Started listing
I
was stuff. Like,
I started listening shit off. He's like, hey, you know what? You're right. Well, I shouldn't have let you off alone.
You were doing that. My favorite, you guys do. Well, there's a lot of really good, you guys doing bad stuff. Did you get into the actual bad stuff? I love that you said my dad may be listening, so let's watch it. And we're immediately now going into the worst stuff you ever did.
I said my dad's listening now, so give him a shout
out. Out right now. Way to leave him home alone, Mr. V. it didn't really matter. One of my favorites, when they were outside, went down to the Shirks to see one of the neighborhood kids' houses to see if they could come out and play. Go to the door, knock. Oh no! Somehow miraculously, there must have been masks going on or something, because all 12 of them were gone. No one can play. Tim and Pat. Well, what are we gonna do? I got an idea. Let's just stand in their front yard and throw this stick at each other. So they're just standing in the yard, chucking a stick at each other. Pat's throwing away from the house. Tim's throwing towards the house. Tim gets a little overzealous. He's known for being quite an athlete, and just chucks the stick. Pat dodges it, turns and watches it just smash into the window of the Shirk's house, turns around, and Tim's already like halfway down the street, just took off running. So Pat, of course, follows suit, tears off, follows him to the house, comes in the house, thinks, all right, didn't see anyone out there. I think we're clear. We got away with it. Immediately, your dad comes up. Well, all right, what'd you guys do? And he's like, how'd you know? How did you see us doing it? I don't know what you guys did, but Tim ran to the house, immediately ran upstairs, and is now hiding under his bed. So I know you guys did something wrong.
What? Can't an 8-year-old just run screaming
15.
And crying
he
up the stairs?
He was 15 if he was a day. For as much bad stuff as you guys did, to not figure out, once you're inside the house, you're clear. To still feel like, I don't know, I got to get under the bed. The house isn't safe enough.
There could be cameras in here. Who knows? They could have tapped us.
Well, it backfired that time. The bed's proven a safety net before, but it backfired that time.
Well, I just got off the phone with my brother, who I use as my confidant all the time, and I had a tough decision to make. And I was talking to him, and he goes, is this just one of those decisions that you already know the answer to, but it's just hard to make, and so you're just going to talk it out loud and you want to sit here and listen? And I'm like, that's exactly right. He's like, all right,
taking...
well, let's just cut the shit here and just do what you know you got to do. I was like, fuck, all right.
I want to know what that was, but we don't have to cover it on air. It was it Watch Slamboree 99? Some no one wants actually so oh my gosh, I got it on right now and the first match is going, which was, do you want to give the let's
okay,
dig in.
Yeah, well give me, I'm gonna go ahead and tell the okay. listeners what we're about to do here. We are going to review WCW Slamboree 1999. This one aired in, I believe, April 99 from the TWA Dome in St. Louis, Missouri. And the reason I chose this pay-per-view was because I was in attendance at this show.
I wasn't there,
and,
correct.
I wasn't there.
I'm sure I watched it on pay-per-view, but I wasn't there. But
one of the things I wanted to note here was, like, this was the second time they came to St. Louis. So St. Louis had... WWF had the marketplace cornered. They did not. They had a no compete clause with all the arenas, so that means they were the only game that could come to town. But that contract expired in '98, and so the first chance they could, WCW brought Nitro to the TWA Dome, and when they did that first time they came, that Nitro, December 1998, my friend and I stood in line, and we bought probably 60 tickets. No joke.
No, this was in December. You guys bought tickets like way in advance. It was like,
right. We did the whole, like, this was pre-internet. Like we went to Schnucks and like got line tickets real tickets.
I think the key was you bought them in like early '98 when like it was still everyone was still loving wrestling and it was still the product they were putting out was looked on. It was hot. It was when it was super hot.
It was when it was super hot. So we easily got 60 people. And maybe not 60, 40. Something, a ridiculous amount of people. We got floor tickets. It was a great time. We went to the Nitro.
I was one of the 40.
Then, yeah. Yeah, we made a bunch of signs. We did the whole rigmarole. We had some signs confiscated, as it were, as well.
No.
You remember which ones got confiscated? My Sting Loves Warrior, Married to a Man. that side.
Yeah, which was a legitimate rumor that I can't, I don't know how it could have been started within just our circle of people. But I remember like hearing, oh yeah, Warrior and which I wonder if that just goes back to the fact if somehow people have heard, oh, they used to be partners. And then that transformed to, oh, they are life partners.
Obviously once you've tag team with a man, you slept with them, so Sting and Warrior married Sting and Warrior just married to a man. It wasn't like insulting, it was
just
making
stating
a statement.
Facts that were not true at all.
I presumed. And then my other one I got taken away said, you know, the Horseman was in Roman numerals, so it was IV Horseman, and so I wrote a big H in front of the IV. And then I wrote the Four Horsemen, and
that
got taken away.
That seems almost too clever. I'm surprised they really put the two and two together on
that. And then the final one that got taken away said, Heart Fart.
That was directly from the night we were making signs. We were watching the Wrestling with Shadows documentary. And in that documentary, they're doing interviews with the kids. And they were like, they used to say, they'd say, they'd call us Heart Fart. We hated that. Oh, we hate it when they call us Hard Fart. And the worst thing they could do was say, your dad's a phony, Stu's a phony. And we immediately just started making the sign, Hard Fart, Stu's a phony. Well, they gave us our walking papers right there. That's not the right terminology. But
even though we both love the Hard Fart.
I was a huge Bret Hart fan. But like,
and Horseman fan.
Yeah,
and Sting fan. Like, I had no problem with any
but,
of them.
I mean, they just opened it right up there. This is the one thing that's going to piss me off. That's, you know, you got to go for the jugular. Right. If wrestling's taught us anything, go for the...
So that was Nitro. That was a Nitro 1998. And now WCW comes back to the TWA Dome after selling about 60,000 seats that first time.
I think you said April, but this is actually May. It was May, so you were a month off, but close enough.
Okay. Sorry, I was way off. So the next time they come back, they sell tickets again. This time, I'm like, well, you know, we 40 people wanted to go this time. I'm sure a bunch want to go this time. No, no one wanted to go. I bought 4 tickets, and it was for me, my friend Scott, you, and someone else, and I don't remember. And I know you couldn't go, and someone else couldn't go, so I was left with 2 extra tickets. I couldn't give them away.
Was this event where you did the little contest beforehand? We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Keep going with you. I'm sorry. Yeah, killed your momentum there.
That was not. That was a WWF event, I believe. But so we were. So I was trying to find people to go to the show. Anyway, long story short, WCW shows up the second time, and they sell maybe 20,000 tickets this time. A year later, after having been the hottest thing ever, a year later, they sell a third the amount of tickets to the pay per view.
The show's not even a year later. The show is like a few months late, you know, because the Nitro was 98 December 98. It's like 5 months later. Yeah.
6 months later or something.
Yeah. Not, right. Yeah.
I want to say about the
Nitro though. That's what the key was, that the tickets were on sale so far in advance. And I really do think we had a bunch of friends who just held out, who if they hadn't already promised to buy those tickets, would have stopped watching wrestling like a month or two before. But they just wrote right. out wrestling,
I
knowing
see.
I'm going to this event. And not that they fully consciously thought, I'm going to quit watching wrestling immediately. But basically, it was like, this is the last hurrah for their wrestling fandom. And then they were out.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, to keep going.
So from there, so that was 1999. In 2000, WCW comes back to the TWA Dome. And they're going to run another Nitro. This time, I didn't even bother to purchase tickets. I didn't even bother to bring anybody. All I did was I simply walked downtown, got out of my car, walked up to the front gate, and there were people papering. And I was just handed a ticket. It was insane. The 3-year span of me buying 60 tickets to me buying 4 tickets to me being given a free ticket. It was just
how
unbelievable.
How good was the
fall?
The papered seat.
It was fine. It was like, you know, first section off the floor and right in the center. So it was a perfectly acceptable ticket.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Other than the fact that you had to watch a 2000 WCW show, that's awesome.
Yeah, and a lot of it started from that first Nitro when they started making all those ridiculous booking decisions, and that led to, you know, Goldberg not beating Kevin Nash clean, and all, you know, the finger poke of doom, and all those bad decisions that ultimately led to the demise of WCW. But this card,
yeah, that leads us back to this show. It's interesting because, like, in my mind, there's two WCWs. There's the WCW of 97, 98 that I just loved. It's kind of my favorite era of wrestling, or my favorite promotion. Mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. I just loved all the wrestlers, all this that they're doing. And then there's like what I think of in my mind is 99, 2000. WCW, which is Russo run, just ridiculous gimmicks, terribleness. I really forget this. This is almost this in-between transition to terribleness era that you forget about. That's basically Bischoff still in charge, because the big thing that wrestling became is just nonsensical. The matches are just trash. They're switching angles. There's no continuity. And within this, like, I was surprised how much continuity there had. Now, there's a ton of stuff watching the show that I forgot about. Oh, these guys were heels here. I totally forgot that. Oh, this feud, there's a bunch of feuds and stuff, but and there's stuff I remember. And we'll get into like the specifics of like, oh, I remember this. I remember this happening. But watching it, like, one thing that I give them credit for is the announcing. They do a great job in the show of referencing the past, the history of guys. Oh, well, Kidman, speaking of this first match we're going to get into, it's Raven Saturn. It's a 3 corners tag team championship match. Raven and Saturn. which they kind of get into a little. They make reference to, like, these guys have had their history and had whatever past, versus the Horsemen team of Benoit and Malenko, who are heels here, which I didn't, which makes sense in watching the whole pay per view. I kind of remember Flair going heel when he became the president and basically went insane. And I guess these guys, I'd forgotten, but it makes sense that it was an extension of that, that all the Horsemen basically just became heels. And then you have, which seems to be pre-term Filthy Animals, but essentially a Filthy Animals team of Ray Jr. and Kidman. But they talk a lot about how Kidman was part of the flock and he's got history with Raven and Saturn and things of that nature, which I think
they even said Kidman can't be watching Ray's back 24/7. He's got a lot of autograph signings and things to do. They said that.
Well, and which that was the other good thing too, is like, I felt like there was a lot of tweeners in this show, which, not that I just like tweeners, but this idea of like, they're sowing seeds of potential splits between different guys. It's not just like, oh, these guys are partners until a 2-week span where they just break them up. And now the one guy hates the other guy. All of a sudden they're kind of setting up where like, there's a little tension between them. Things aren't quite going right, but you really don't know. Did that actually go anywhere? Did they, as we know, the Filthy Animals were a team for quite a while. So it didn't actually become like a full blown feud angle or anything like that. Which I think works, is like, let guys have dynamic relationships and like a little bit of tension. It doesn't mean, oh, they either have to be best friends, hugging all the time, love each other, or they're totally feuding, hate each other, swerving each other.
Well,
anyway, go on.
One thing I noticed about this card was that every single goddamn match ended with this with interference. And I started watching this show, and I'm like, damn, this first match is really good. It's it's got six really good wrestlers in there, and they had a hell of a match. But of course, they had to do some ridiculous finish, and Raven and ended up hitting Billy Kidman with the Even Flow DDT, and they won the championships. But there had to be interference. It had to be the beginning of this. No match can end just because a match ends.
And I noticed the same thing, especially later in the card. It really becomes noticeable in some of the main event matches we'll get to. On a whole, though, you're right. Yeah, it's the other thing I know that really stood out to me about this match is, as you had just suggested to me earlier in the week, watching Barely Legal. And Barely Legal's opening match was an Eliminators versus Dudley Boys, Perry Saturn, Cronus versus the Dudley Boys match. And anytime you watch any ECW tag match, the first thing that you, especially if it's your first one, the first thing that jumps out to you, well, there's no tags involved in this match at all. It's just all the guys in the ring at all times. And that influence is super apparent in this match, that there's that the first, I want to say at least like half, we could even say third of the match, maybe half the match, is there's no tags. It's not even like Lucha style, where like if a guy exits the ring, the other guy can come in. It's just three guys are in the ring at any time. Any guy can enter at any time. There's the refs just there counting pinfalls. There's no real.
Yeah.
Now the match has worked really well, but they just want just the action just to be constant and like, and all guys to be involved. They eventually hit a point in the match, which is why I like that. Benoit and this is the other thing that's very non-ECW, is they had a really good storyline to the match, that we want the and not to say that ECW didn't do storylines and didn't think out there with psychology of the matches, but the narrative psychology of the match is, we want to establish the Horsemen as the most cohesive team. We want to establish them as kind of the dominant force, and there's this middle section to the match where they really do take charge and actually start doing some quick tags. Like they basically like decimate the other teams and lay out the guys for interference, and then start one by one kind of picking them apart in the ring and tagging each other in and out. And that was kind of my favorite section of the match. It's almost started to feel like it came back, started feeling like a traditional tag match. But the work was good throughout. And then they went into kind of a high spot finish, and it was more like the beginning, where it's just everybody going crazy. There was one at the beginning. I have it just playing here. And at the beginning of the podcast, I gave a whoa when Billy Kidman took a huge bump over the top rope.
Yeah, just to the floor for no reason.
For no reason. But right, even if right out of the gate in this first match, I do want to put the commentary over again. Because that's the other thing is I think everyone remembers the commentary in WCW just being terrible, which it was on Nitros, because they got into this habit of just promoting the main event and just promoting future stuff, ignoring the matches that were going on in the ring. And that was my big gripe at the time with them. But the work they did during pay-per-views and actually, like, not just selling angles, but selling psychology and selling, like, WWE, WWF, I think, at the time, and especially now, goes out of their way to ignore anything that doesn't make sense or, like, anything that's, like, a mess-up or whatever. And WCW did a really good job of addressing it in a way to either minimize it or recognize that, like, these rules. Now, what are even the rules here? Oh, they're wonky. And not in a way that, like, calls it out and makes it look bad. Oh, here comes the interference. What I'm watching now is Canyon sneaking up with the mask on. Oh, just rack Kidman on the top
rope. Yeah, that was so dumb. And the referee distraction, it was like,
yeah,
he was, like, yelling at Arn Anderson or something. He was yelling at him so much and admonishing him. The referee left the fucking ring.
Yeah,
he got out of the ring. It'd be like a baseball umpire, like leaving a home plate and then going to yell at someone in the crowd and getting in the crowd and following him up to stuff.
Yeah,
so ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It wasn't Arn even. Arn was, because I was just watching that part, and Arn was on the other side of the ring. I don't know who he went out after. It must have been Ray, because Ray was the only one not involved.
It was Ray. Yeah, he was yelling at Ray.
But that's the thing. The finish was that Raven hits the even flow on Kidman while Dean Malenko has the ring or the Texas Cloverleaf on Saturn. And it's like the ref kind of basically has two finishes going on. The ref chooses which one. He chooses the count as opposed to getting the submission. And I think that finish in itself is enough of a weird, controversial kind of weird finish that they could have just done that. It could have just gotten a clean even flow on Kidman. You're wanting to protect Kidman, but there's a bunch of ways he could have gotten racked and it not been an interference or like a, you know, like a cheap shot. Anyway, I think,
why was Canyon wearing a fucking Sting mask?
Why does he need to be? He's behind. Oh my God. He's behind the. I'll wait for the flush.
You're supposed to kayfabe the flush.
That was the flush heard around the world right there. There's no kayfabe in that.
I'll clean it up in post.
Oh, hold on. I got to leave the room to chase after Rey Mysterio. I missed the flush.
So, Rey Mysterio, it looks like you don't have anything on under your overalls.
Let me examine what's in there. Let me look down below.
Just wearing overalls like he's kid and players.
That was a huge.
It was awesome.
Demasking him was a huge. But either way, we're not going to get in the whole mask country. But yeah, the finish I think would have been good with just the two finishes going on at the same time. The ref having to choose would. Yeah, I think the interference on that match was too much. But the match was well worked. I mean, I really, like I said, I liked it. Was action packed. You could see how the influence of like the ECW, just everything going at once. But at the same time, it wasn't too much. And there was a section in there of kind of more traditional. I should say I'm giving ECW full credit. I think a lot of it, too, is the WWF, WWE, like tables, ladders, and chairs that the Hardys and Edge and Christian and the Dudleys were doing at the time. Like, I think it's all – like, you can maybe chain it from that. It was ECW influenced those matches and then turned those, like, nonstop, just spot fest affected how they were doing their tag, structuring the psychology of their tag matches. So now we have the NWO leader.
This was where it was apparent that, like, all right, there's a joke NWO and a real NWO.
Yes.
And here comes the goose.
And the thing was, I remembered that there was the joke NWO, that the NWO Black and White became just all the jobbers who had gotten into the NWO got quarantined into the traditional NWO, and then there are these special like VIP sections of the NWO that were the real. But I'd forgotten that Stevie Ray was named the leader of the NWO, which is just the only thing I remember out of this era NWO is the Cat. There's that they were doing that gimmick where the Cat would come out and talk trash on the locker room in general every single episode. And then as a joke, all the guys, the jobber NWO guys would be watching in the back and would yell to Scott Norton in the shower, like, "Hey, Norton, Cat's out there talking trash on you again." And he'd like, what? He'd be like mid-shave. And he'd go out there and just squash the Cat. That was like repeatedly happened. But it was that NWO was doing that bit where the ex Horace Hogan and Stevie Ray and Vincent. So
I would have liked to have seen the end completely defeat WCW and then just like try and run a wrestling promotion successfully, like a backstage vignette of like Brian Adams like filling out his 401k plan. He's like, "God damn it, I don't know, do I have an independence here?" And like Vincent just being like, "Oh man, are we going to unionize?" And Hogan being like, "No, God damn it, no. All right, here we go. You know, we're going to have a meeting here." I think that'd have been funny, just corporate NWO.
I think Vincent would have been. He would have been head of human resources. He would have been the one like, "Hell, oh yeah, I got my law degree. I do contract work. I can help you with that."
We can repackage you. Just cause we can change it. What do you like about Curly Bill? How about that?
They were a sloppy mess. That was an organization. I'm still not sure. K-Dog, clearly he's out of not Conan, mind you. K-Dog is out of the NWO altogether at this point. And this is my case. This is one of my hot takes. It seems like the wrestling world in general, you listen to any podcast and Conan comes up and it's just glowing reviews of like, "Oh, everyone knows Conan was great." Conan was terrible. And this isn't me like just as a 1998, 1999 fan saying, "Oh, I don't like Conan." This is retrospectively, he's terrible. First of all,
he's very bad.
His
in the ring is awful.
Work is awful. Like his is awful. I think the quintessential K-Dog move is the kick to the stomach, like float around, kind of float over thing, which he's going to do in a second in this match here. I don't know. You're not watching it right now.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And it's just
like
so,
and then
yeah,
it's
so sloppy.
It's supposed to be a lucha spot where he like hooks the arm and flings
around.
Yeah,
but never actually leaves the ground. And just like lazy. All his moves are like just go through the motion lazy. Like, yep, there it is. Boom. Yeah, into a face buster kind of thing.
Hey, there's ranch. There's creamy. There's strawberry vinaigrette. You can choose any one of them. Because I'm going to make you toss my salad and peel my potatoes. That was his mic work, almost verbatim.
That was it.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the other complaint. His mic work was terrible. He got one little yada yada. He had a shtick. He didn't do mic work. He didn't do promos. He did a shtick that was the exact same every time, and like was just a cheap, quintessential cheap pop. And I can recently I was watching an old 98 Nitro or Thunder, and like someone improvised. He was in the ring with someone, and they like it was may have been Jericho or someone, but they started jawing at him, and it was clear like he has no ability to improvise and like come back. He had nothing. Not to say that like guys. Anyway, that's a regular thing that guys like just riff on each other. It doesn't need to be The Rock versus Jericho. But you could just tell he doesn't really have any mic skills or game as far. He just has some bits that he had planned out ahead of time, and he does his bits. That got over.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, it got over. But yeah, you know, it was just sing along time in 98. It didn't matter what you said.
To give him credit for like good mic skills, I think is like way, way too much credit. I don't think he's as bad now. I think he's probably better now than he was back then. Almost what I've seen of him in TNA, but of course
this match has to end with Rey Mysterio running out and interfering and making the save for Conan as you know he made Vincent Horace Hogan on at ringside.
Does
to dive or something? What it was? Just in a row.
Does Rick Steiner get involved in this?
And it's just, like, it just goes down from
there's
there.
Multiple. First of all, there's already the external NWO members who are interfering, kind of.
Yes.
But that's almost like, oh, they're part of the match. I mean, for God's sakes, they're one entity. Like, when you go to fight, you know that Vince and Horace are
of course.
Yeah. So that doesn't even really count as interference. I think Stevie Ray's outfit should count as interference.
Oh my God. The black and white pinstripes. It's terrible.
I mean, I almost feel like this is like, not to say it's a Dusty Rhodes polka dot level rib, must be a rib thing. I do feel like Stevie Ray he knows it's intentional, like, to get heat. They're like, I'm going to wear the most hideous, like, outfit I can possibly put together.
I just think that he wanted to make himself look a little bit taller, so he went with some vertical stripes. Ooh,
vertical stripes are good for that. They're good for that. It really is. It really does stand out. I mean, it's kind of great. It's so terrible. It's a great outfit. But the question is, does he know, with the slapjack right on the ass, right on his butt, it looks like, not only does it say slapjack on his butt, it looks like it looks like he had a group of kindergartners, like, cut it out of, as a project. You guys are gonna cut this out of felt and hot glue it to my butt.
And what it says is slapjack, meaning this is the illegal weapon I use all the time.
Yes. I'm gonna
get one that says, like, chain in my tights. Or loaded fist.
Yeah. Chain hidden here, and have an arrow pointing to, like, the spot where you. Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll talk about hidden chains later on in the show, but yeah.
Oh, it'll be there. Yep.
That match was freaking brutal. And then we got to Bam Bam Bigelow and Brian Knobs in a hardcore match.
It was what it was. I mean, like, it's, what are your thoughts on that one?
I mean, it was the hardcore title, and they hit each other with a lot of shit, and that's exactly what you want in a hardcore match. But the title wasn't exactly a joke, but it was definitely the lowest rung title.
What was the evolution of the hardcore titles? Who started doing it first, WWF or WCW? Do you remember?
I think it was ECW started doing it.
Did they even have a specific hardcore title, though? That was just all their titles.
Well,
ECW have a hardcore title when anything goes in every one of their matches?
Maybe I'm wrong, but I know the first hardcore title was something to the effect of, it was a WWF belt with, like, the wings.
The broken wing.
It was smashed up. It got smashed up at an angle, and someone made it into their own belt or something like that.
I think maybe Mick Foley. I think Mankind maybe was the, what in my mind is the first hardcore champ, and he had it first. So maybe they did it first. Now, this wasn't for the hardcore title, though, was it? There's no belt. They don't.
Yeah.
Did they come out with a belt? I don't think so.
It just says it was a hardcore match. Yeah. No, it doesn't say.
Yeah,
title.
I don't think I don't think they had a title yet. I think they just started doing these matches. Okay. But I think maybe if WWE didn't first start announcing matches as hardcore matches, I think they definitely were the first company to have an official hardcore title. I think at the same time, though, I think WCW had essentially been doing these matches for years. You go back and watch, like, Nasty Boys versus Harlem Heat in the Falls County, or even, like, way back to, like, Nasty Boys versus Cactus Jack and Max Payne, Falls Count Anywhere, that were just plunder matches.
I got the origin of the belt. The Hardcore Championship belt was rumored to have been a replica of the Winged Eagle WWF Championship belt, which was smashed in several places and reassembled with two pieces of duct tape and inscribed with the words Hardcore and Champion in marker. During a feud with Mr. Perfect and then champion Hulk Hogan, Hennig stole the belt, smashed the center medallion with a hammer during an interview. As Hennig had done so much genuine damage, a replica belt had to be used for the remainder of the storyline. The center medallion on the replica and the Hardcore Championship match of the actual hardcore title is identical. Mick Foley commented that he did not know if the belt that Hennig smashed was later used as the Hardcore Championship, but that it makes perfect sense. So it was rumored to have been that, but it wasn't necessarily that.
Well, fascinating.
And I think the first hardcore champion was Crash Holly.
Oh, really? Are you sure he didn't win it from Foley had it first? I think Foley introduced the belt, but then he lost it. Like, he didn't win it from you.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Mr. McMahon awarded the Mankind WWF Hardcore Championship on November 2nd, 1998. Mankind lost it to the Big Boss Man.
Anyway, and therefore...
It was Crash Holly that introduced the 24/7 rule.
I see. Yeah, that was a great addition. That really... Anyway. But so WCW, I think, have been doing these kind of matches for a while. But I guess to... Oh, that was a huge spot right there. I had the match going right there. There's a spot where Knobs goes to hit Bam Bam with the chair, raises it above his head, and goes at him, and Bam Bam falls back, pulls down the ropes, and Knobs basically dumps over the top rope, but he just launches the folding chair towards the front, like easily could have just thrown it into the front row, and it's like the one item that, like, oh, that would have really hurt someone if he just super reckless. The other thing I noticed about this match too is I think Knobs was getting paid like per use of the word nasty. They basically said, we just give you $100 every time you say the word nasty. So if you watch his walk to the ring, he says nasty. This is nasty. Let's get nasty. I'm so nasty. Who's nasty? Who likes nasty? Nasty, nasty, nasty. Pay me my nasty money.
They're sponsored by some sort of like Doritos nasty
sponsored
chip.
Sponsored by the in section of Webster's Dictionary. I don't know what, but he says nasty so many damn times. Hey, Brandy, someone's got to do it. But overall, it was what it was. Once again, I want to put the announcers over huge. That they knew exactly what this match was. They had fun watching it. The commentary, like the dynamic between Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay, I think is, you know, they do the three-person announce teams these days, and it's just like, what is this person's purpose? Like, we kind of have a heel, we kind of got, like, it's just like figuring out and these guys, each guy had such a distinct kind of role within, and worked so well together within those roles that it just, I don't know. And then, but they just seem like, even though I know they're kind of not, it seems like they're having fun. That the rapport between them is really good, and Tony calling out. I know he's been criticized for this, but I actually the fact that he calls out the cookie sheets. They're just tin. They're tin. Yeah, I think he calls them aluminum trash cans, and kind of this item would really hurt. Like he kind of calls out that a lot of it's just dog and pony show stuff. Which it's like, it's so obvious that that's the case anyway. I prefer them calling a spade rather than feeling the need to protect the business. You know what I'm saying? I just rather have them say like, oh, but then.
Kids, do this at home. It doesn't hurt.
Well, I don't care about that part. But just this idea that everyone in the arena, everyone at home knows, like, oh, that's really, it's not a super devastating weapon, this trash can. But also acknowledging, like, once it gets crumpled, they say something like that, oh, once it's crumpled, then it becomes much more dangerous, which is true. It becomes sharp and, like, anyway. I like their approach with the way their...
This match was...
All right. No, yeah, moving on. Uh-oh, you're breaking up on me.
Can you hear me, John?
Yeah, you're back. Okay.
Back.
Anyway, this one, you're back. We're good. This one ends with the concession stand that no fans have access to. Yeah.
Yes.
What's your merch sales at there? The backstage concession stand. And it's just for the boys. Okay, we are back.
We are back. We are live. Of course, the Comedy Suplex Podcast. This is a grappling cooperative. If you're just picking us up halfway, I am the Viggity, the Peach Machine. Alongside me is my co-host, Nature Boy John. And we were about to start talking about WCW Slamboree 1999, midway through the card match. It was Ricky Steiner versus Big Booker T.
Oh, wait, real quick, though, I did want to just make one comment about the finish of this hardcore match that ends in the workers' concession stand that's just there to sell t-shirts to the boys backstage. But Knobs climbs up and goes off the balcony, and like I couldn't fully make it out that first time, but it looks like they blow that spot and he almost new jacks himself into, you know, it's
like, yes he like almost overshoots the table,
yeah, and it seems super dangerous. That was the other thing about the WCW, which maybe my biggest complaint about it is that I think it's a good little niche, kind of like, oh, we're going to do these hardcore matches. It's the only match. Oh my God, he throws. There's the worker at the concession stand that he just decimates and throws down. But then he sets up this table for the spot. But like, I think back to that junkyard hardcore match they did, where like 16 people. Bars. Yeah, yeah. But the thing about them is they were such like. Their niche match is like, oh, this is a nice little filler, something different on the card. Not exactly a popcorn match, but gives you a break from the normal drama. It's kind of somewhat comedy, but also really spot oriented. But they're not like a major event thing. They're just kind of a filler, something different match. And yet, like, the downside is the guys are so careless and just destroying themselves.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah, super careless.
And, like, For like a mid-card whatever match, it just seems so much more dangerous in the way it's executed than it should be. Here he's going up for, but anyway, it was what was, and it wasn't the worst so far. There's been one really good match which was the opening three-corner tag match, which wasn't, you know, killer, but it was very, very solid. Terrible match with the NW Conan Stevie Ray.
Yeah, terrible.
This was what it was. I think filled a need. Definitely, even at the time, would have. And there he goes. Oh my gosh. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, and fills its need. And then we go into the Rick Steiner. Who's he?
Booker T.
Thank you. Match.
It was for the TV championship.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I always. We realized back then, I've always been a big fan of the TV belt just because it had that individual, you know, obviously the cruiserweight title has what separates it from the other titles. That's always the thing with like the US title or intercontinental title. It's like, well, it's just a title held by not quite as good a wrestler as the world champ.
Right.
But
right.
The TV title, at least it doesn't exclude a TV champ could easily go on. You know, there was always a complaint about the cruiserweight title. The good part is, oh, it's for the smaller guys, and so you feel like, oh, well, it's different. It's different guys are competing for it or whatever, so it makes it more important that it's the champion of smaller guys. But the downside is, then you put that label on a guy who wins it, and it's hard to move him up the card. Hard to get him credibility in those heavyweight matches. The nice part about the TV title is you can have your big guys, your heavyweight guys, competing for it and winning it, and doesn't degrade them, but it has that specific nature of like, oh, it has to be a fighting champ. When you're the TV champ, the stipulations are you have to defend it. Like, you know, you can make it whatever.
Well, see, I wish they were more clear about the stipulations. They never were. You know, it should be like, this is a 10-minute time limit always,
yes,
and it's defended once a week on TV always,
yes,
or something like that.
Well, they
like kind
of talk about it in this pay-per-view. Shivani kind of says it, like, oh, this is the fighting champ that has to be defended on the shows, and that, and I think at different times they have laid out that time limit. I remember you were really big on that. I remember you kind of turning me onto that you really liked that aspect of it, that it had,
yeah.
But yeah, like, I think it's great. I think we kind of used to fantasy book making that more prominent, saying like for TV, for the TV shows, it's a 10-minute time limit. For pay-per-views, it goes to maybe a 15-minute time limit. But it has to be defended every week. If you go a week without defending it, then you're and it makes it
you're strapped. Yeah.
And then it makes it it just gives it a different feel and a different specific nature to it that like, oh, this guy's a fighting champ. He's an endurance guy. That's why he specializes in going for the television title and whatever. It has different like, level of prestige.
Like ROH has a TV championship, but there's no reason for it. It's simply a secondary
belt.
And they had an opportunity. Too. Yeah. And I'm like, well, like that just means what is this guy more television photogenic or something? like what does it mean? Yeah. It means nothing. It's just a secondary title. So give it something. You know, that's one of the problems I have with the ROH TV title is they have an opportunity like every week or at least once a month or something so that they state it and then they do it.
And it's nice, especially even more so the time limit than it's a built-in storyline. It's a built-in kind of different
angles.
Yeah, different angle. And that you're always fighting to come up with storylines and finishes and like things going and having that be in a narrative that like these matches, which on TV, I think if you establish it, people aren't going to be super pissed if it becomes a thing that with this belt in particular, that these matches are hit the time limit draw on a semi-regular basis.
Yeah.
Like you can establish that. I think a lot of times time limit draws back in the old days, that used to be a thing. And then it became where they didn't do them. And then when you'd have one, it felt like a ripoff. It felt like, oh, schmaz finish kind of thing. Like, oh, a non-finish finish. But if you establish it as like, oh, that's the champ that's a way the champ is able to escape without losing his belt is by hitting these time limits. I think, which I actually do think it, especially early on in the prime Nitro era, they would do time limit draws more frequently than you saw in a lot of other times.
I don't mind a time limit draw. I like that. I like putting a cap on it, and it gives you that third
way out. Especially
for guys
who face each other multiple times, and it's not like the first time guys face off. You want to have I feel like I want to see a winner. I want to see a completion of a match when it's like a built up, like what's going to happen? This guy versus this guy. That's when I feel like ripped off by a schmaz finish, like maybe what we're going to see later, or like a we'll get to it when we get to it, but. Or like a time limit draw where you feel like, oh, well, they just didn't want to give us a finish. But if it's a guy like Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero or whatever, you know, guys who have fought a few times and it's been a bad, or Benoit, you know, and Booker T in the best of seven, you know, having those matches, that kind of style match where it's a feud that, you know, these guys on any given day, either one guy could beat the other guy. Having those matches go to time limit draws, I think just reinforces the idea of a parity within their skill set and like how they're, oh, these guys are very evenly matched. And it adds to when like, okay, now we're going to do a cage match to really get a winner. We're going to set anything goes, you know, building towards those stip matches. I think a time limit draw in the lead up works really well. So anyway, all that plays in with the television title, I think has an opportunity. And, you know, you say like, oh, they didn't establish those rules well. They did it better than anybody else. I mean, other than tag matches, WWF, ECW, other companies have never really done a good job of establishing, other than maybe like you have your tag matches, your hardcore title, and your cruiserweight title are like have specific rules that go along with them. But other than those titles, no one else has tried to venture to set like the X division in TNA. Like, what does that even mean? What is the X division?
Like, yeah, I know. No limits. That's what it means.
Yeah, yeah, and it's trying to like develop these other. It's that they want to have the cake and eat it too, where they have divisions, they have like these limitations, but without putting any limitations. But we don't want to confine the guys who are competing for it. So it's just like have vague terminology that doesn't really apply to anything, which is what wrestling's all about. It's just all about terminology. It's just coming up with different catchphrases and sayings and applying those. Speaking of, that's something I wanted to ask you about, is your history. Maybe we should do a whole episode on this. I may have even brought this up. Maybe I'm bringing up something from past. But your history with kayfabe language. Like, what do you think the first piece of like kayfabe like wrestler talk language that you ever heard was?
Man, I think worker was would first ones rather than wrestler. They called them workers because you're working a match.
Yeah.
For me, and kayfabe itself.
Oh,
maybe.
Really? So that was like I can remember as in like the mid era when I was like the mid early 90s when I wasn't really watching too much. But my brother turning me on to he had somehow heard the term jobber. I'm like 90% positive. The term jobber was like, oh, the guys who, and it's funny that when you were a kid, everyone had kind of their own, I think, term. I know that I've heard the term dog meat wrestler. For some reason, some people have like referred to jobbers back in the 80s. Yeah. As like, but like my brother told me that's specifically what guys were called who lost all the time, which I knew what they were. Oh, you mean Coco Beware? We're talking about, or even more so like the Brooklyn Brawler or whoever. But not being coming familiar with that term. Yeah. Like shoot angle, shoot heel and face. Those are ones I became aware of pretty early on too. What's funny to me is even now, like it wasn't like maybe a year or 2 years ago, I just became aware of the term Gaga. Like I wasn't aware that the word Gaga was a wrestling term. And so,
what do you think it means?
And that's the other thing. It's so some people Gaga is like basically garbage wrestling, any sort of just like whatever trash that's used, like non-wrestling kind of stuff. Oh, just do a bunch of Gaga here. And some people, it means any kind of just like filler, like,
yeah,
like basically just like filler nonsense stuff, posing to the crowd, doing we'll do this, here's the set, and then just do some Gaga for 30 seconds or what, or fill some time with some Gaga. But it's just basically like filler stuff. Like,
exactly. I mean, that's how I know it to mean. Yeah. And I use that term a lot because I do a lot of Gaga in my matches where it's just, all right, now here I'm going to pose the crowd. Here I'm going to talk trash. Here I'm going to get in somebody's face and, and just do some stuff that's not selling or moves. You know?
Definitely not even like planned out, but just like, whatever comes to my mind. Just Gaga. It's just filler. Raven, I was listening to, I think, Steve Austin's podcast, and Raven used the term in that exact context of just like filler, whatever stuff. And I was like, oh, I was unfamiliar. And since then I've heard, a few times. We got this television title match going on. That was one thing I'd forgotten. What happened? You got to go to the bathroom again?
No, you're just breaking up. I hope this is coming through.
We're still going.
Getting back
to this television title match. I had forgotten this in my mind, or in my memory, I should say, not in my mind. The only really singles feud that Rick Steiner had was his feud against Scott. I had forgotten that he kind of like, which I don't think he did much. I basically think he had that chase on Scott, trying to get his comeuppance against Scott. I don't know what other single stuff he did, but here we have him in a singles match with Booker T for that TV title. And it's like, I'm really enjoying this. I think is a solid kind of underrated match. I don't know. What did you think about this match?
Well, I really like the Steiner brothers, and I thought, there were some good moves and there was some good wrestling in here, but again, they had to go to a interference finish that I thought was stupid, and this match didn't go very long, so it didn't really build a lot, but I like Rick Steiner. I think he's entertaining.
The work is really solid. Like, it's very physical, very brawly, but the brawling is really strong, looks really good. Yeah, the Steiners are awesome, man. And it doesn't, this is a spot where it doesn't, where the continuity of the show and the storylines doesn't make much sense. It makes no sense for Rick and Scott to reunite after what they went through. And this is, and I don't think a year ago they ever would have written that storyline, just because like, how can these guys just get back together? Especially without like some traumatic event. You know, if one of them had gotten injured, something that like makes him rethink his outlook on life, but also
he dyed his hair blonde. He was rethinking everything.
Well, that was before. That was what broke him up in the first place with the dye job. That split him. What brings him back together?
Leached into his hair, into his brain. He's like, you know what? I think I need to get back with old Ricky.
I think it was not dyeing the soul patch of the goatee. That's what got them back together. Having that little bit of black, jet black hair. It reminds me of the good old days back when I had dark hair. I gotta get back with Ricky. It really didn't add up. Do you know if Scott is in the NWO at this point? So K Dog we know is out. Kevin Nash is in, but he's in the VIP section.
Yeah. Scott Steiner's definitely in. He's in the NWO.
So they're bringing Rick into the NWO at this point then too.
That was what they were trying to do. I don't think they ever did it, but yeah,
That was the other thing too. Is this is the start of like of setting up storylines just that never go anywhere.
Yeah,
but anyway,
our next match we had here was a lot of action and a lot of interference. It was Gorgeous George with Medusa, with Miss Madness, and with Randy Savage taking on Little Nature Boy Charles Robinson with the Head Nurse and Ric Flair, because we need 7 people involved in this match.
Yeah. this is the one match where there should have been. I mean, but first of all, they worked. I remember the Little Nate stuff like it was yesterday. Loved the Little Nate stuff.
I loved it. He was great.
He was
that's great. Right, he did.
His stuff, his Nature Boy impersonation was awesome. This is the height of my dad coming in while wrestling is going on and being like, good God, is that old man on TV again? Meaning Ric Flair. Him just being as crazy and his Ric Flair turned up to 11. Which I guess it's been said that as his work rate, as he got older and he couldn't work like he used to, he started to fill a lot of his matches. Okay, I can't be as intense and whatever, so I'm going to fill it with comedy stuff. So he started to do a lot more. The lean more on the comedy, the face plants, the begging off, like just doing his classic. My God.
The match he has later on in the card, it's nothing but begging off and face plants. Yeah. It's great.
Like it's multiple, great. Doing all multiple of his classic spots multiple times. But yeah. In this match, we get to see them all do them all again. Not only is Rick going to do them 6 times later on tonight, we get to see him right now from Little Nate. So. If you're a Nature Boy fan, you get plenty in this show. That's for sure. I can't
did your
believe
dad walk in during this match and go.
I don't think so.
And go, oh, that old man seems to have slimmed down quite a bit and got
shrunk a few inches. Had his chest concaved. No, he would if he would have walked in during this match, he would have said, "Who's that girl? Who's that lady?" My dad, especially back in the 90s, he had his priorities straight. This is great though. It's one of those matches where it's like there's several matches on the card that are wrestling matches that are there for the action. This match was here for something else, and it delivers on what it was supposed to do. Nate is hilarious. I am surprised how physical the match was. I'm surprised they programmed not even a woman versus a man match, but a non-wrestling woman in a match, and they had as much physicality as they did and as much wrestling as they did in this match was really surprising to me. When I think of my dad and I think of Ric Flair, I think of crazy Ric Flair in the loony bin just acting like an insane person. And so this is like the height of that. This is the height of crazy Ric Flair. Yeah. Which I almost feel like is too crazy. Like I feel like the best crazy Ric Flair was when he was being crazy, but you didn't think he realized how crazy he was being. Like he was just so over the top. You were like, oh my God, this guy is a spaz. But at this point, it's clear that Ric Flair's in on the joke, that he knows that we think he's crazy
they assigned a nurse to follow him around. They sent the head nurse with him, you know.
Well,
all right, nurse. this guy's we're gonna let him go. We're gonna let him go pretend he's president of WCW. But you
I'm president
you
of the
keep
United
an eye
States.
On him.
I'm president of WCW.
this was excellent Ric Flair, but Yeah, you're right. Maybe a little bit too crazy, too self-aware crazy.
Yeah, but it was still pretty great. It was still watching it today. I loved it. I thought it was great. So far, it's up to this point, I think, been a pretty good show. And it's once again interference here. No big deal. It was expected in a match like this. The match following it may be the surprise match of the card, I think.
Yeah. Scotty Steiner, which is the WCW United States Heavyweight Championship, taking on Buff the Stuff Bagwell.
I thought this match was great. Like they, first of all, started off, I did, once again, I had forgotten that this was a feud. I'd forgotten that Buff had gone face. And Buff looked great. I always thought it was back when they first started their partnership, Buff always just looked kind of puffy. Scott always looked just shredded and absolutely giant. But a lot of times I felt like Buff looked kind of bloated and watery and puffy, even though he was big. This is the most probably cut I feel like I saw Buff looking. Uh-oh. You still there? I'm still here.
God damn it. I get no phone calls. Zero people call me throughout the week. And within the span of this fucking show, I've gotten 4 phone calls.
Well, we have been recording for like 4 hours, so that will do it. But I thought the intensity level within the match was really good. Buff came out real hot, and then Scott took over and works him over, and especially where he slams his head into the post and into the mat, his stuff just looked tight and snug and good. I thought so.
No, this was really good, especially from Scott Steiner's standpoint. I love Steiner's physicality, and I love his suplexes and just throwing people all over the place. Yeah. And Buff hung right there with him. Buff was bumping all over the place and making him look good. So, yeah, I got no problem with this match, and I don't think it ended with interference.
No.
I was wrong. Damn it.
This is the reunion of Scott and Rick. They get back together here.
Okay.
So Rick comes out, and you think he's going to – I think it's a full-blown – there's a whole mess, and I think – I can't quite remember. But I think you think someone else comes out maybe to interfere, and you think that Rick is coming out to stop that, to kind of – to even the playing field. Instead, he lays out Buff instead of laying out Scott, and they reunite. So
okay.
Yeah, it's a total mess. It's a total mess. Now I'm not sure if it may actually end in a DQ. They may even get it may be a DQ finish instead
of Steiner won by Steiner won. So
it says Steiner won.
Scott Steiner's brother Rick came to the ring, indicating to Bagwell he was there to help him. Hit his Buff blockbuster. Rick attacked Bagwell with a chair, enabling Scott to pick up the victory.
So that's yet another smile. Yeah. So there is the interferences now. And then what do we have next?
Next we had Rowdy Roddy Piper taking on Ric Flair with Arn Anderson and the head nurse. Now this match was interesting because the original referee for the match, this was when they were fighting for who was the WCW who got to be the president, and Flair was the president. So the ref was Johnny Boone, and well, Nate couldn't have that, so he fired Johnny Boone on the spot, brought in Lil Nate to come out and referee this match. So going against Piper was Flair, Arn Anderson, head nurse, and the referee.
I almost feel like they should have saved this and done the Lil Nate match on one pay-per-view and done this match. Because it's basically the same stuff. At this point, I mean, it's a better worked match. It's more of a wrestling match than that, but really not too much. It's just Flair doing his stuff,
And Piper's not very good. Piper's slow and old, and all he can do is punch and chop.
The chops are pretty physical. The chops are pretty entertaining. Once again, I think I would have really enjoyed this match if I hadn't basically already watched it as Little Nate versus
right.
But for what it was within a card, I think has place. I think at this point we've had a little too many kind of filler matches and could have done with something else, a lucha match or something that's more of a serious wrestling-based match at this point. But it's still, I think if I just watched it on its own, and I still enjoyed it. I think I just watched it on its own, like, oh, watch this this crazy vintage Ric Flair, this era Ric Flair match. I think I would have been like, oh, man, that was awesome. That's hilarious. It's fun. But, yeah, definitely balance, as far as balancing the card goes, I think it was too much on this card. But
yes, anyway. Yes, we didn't need to see that. We didn't need to see them twice.
Yeah. Yep. The whole crew out again. And I don't like the Bischoff stuff. Doesn't really make any sense. Like, why?
Yeah.
Why is Bischoff? It's interesting to me that they've essentially flipped spots for, it makes sense. Maybe it makes more sense than some other stuff. It makes sense. Flair's evolution to the power corruption, where he won the presidency, and it went to his head, and he got corrupted by the power. And even though everyone was all for him a few months ago, now that they realize that, like, he shouldn't be in power, which is art imitating life, which is kind of funny. Just like, I really wonder how much it was intentional, you know, like referencing Flair's era as being the head booker and his, you know, whatever, his kind of failure, not failure, but just like, it's not the right spot for him. Flair is not meant to be running the show.
Right. I see what you're saying. And, yeah. Like, hey, we're acknowledging the fact that Flair was in control one time and that wasn't a very good time.
Yeah. I don't know. It's probably not intentional, but it's funny to me thinking about that, looking, what is that? Someone giving you some chops?
Yeah, I wish. No, I had a hangnail. I was clipping it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right.
Hey, look, when you got a broken leg and you get, and all you can do all day is stare at your fingers and toes, you know, I'll start to notice little tiny things.
Doesn't bode well for the entertainment quality of the show when not even the host can. I'd rather be clipping my nails.
Sorry, it was one of my thumb I had to get.
All right, well, you got to do what you
got
to do.
I got it. Yeah.
So anyway, but the thing that doesn't really make sense, if Bischoff lost the match to Flair to lose his power, how does he have the power to come out here? And they should have done something where, and maybe, I'm pretty sure they didn't. They should have done something on Nitro where like J.J. Dillon went down, or someone on the committee, on the quote-unquote executive committee, went down, and Bischoff was brought in to replace them, and you know, in his limited, he's not whatever, but he where somehow like Harvey Schiller or someone comes out and reestablishes that like Flair's still president, but
right,
but Bischoff,
but we need Bischoff back on the board, he's something, or whatever.
So he does have some, because this idea of like last we saw he was lost all his power, so it's kind of that thing of acknowledging that like, well, everyone knows that presidency is just a storyline, and that behind that, I'm, you know, that kind of, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. It's almost acknowledging that, like, that the truth underneath the fiction, in a way that like that wrecks it for me. I don't know.
Well, this finish was fiction to another degree, because Flair, after having Arn interfere, everyone interfere, the referee just cheating for him, finally, what they go with for the finish is Flair pulls something out of his boot and then punches Piper with a loaded fist and then puts it in his trunks. But here's the kicker. There was nothing in his boot. He hit him with an empty hand and put nothing in his trunks. It was completely phantom. And that's what Eric Bischoff couldn't stand. Not all the other cheating, but Arn just giving him a spine buster. Bischoff just comes to the ring and goes, nope.
Restart the match.
Piper restart. Wins. No, not restart the match.
No,
Piper
I think that. Wins. Oh, no, that's later. Piper wins. That's later. That's no. Right.
Yeah, there that's was no later. Restart. He just goes, nope. We all know you won, Piper. Piper wins. Flair goes crazy. Flair screams at some kid in the front row. Hey, shut up. Hey, shut up. Hey, if you said
you're fine, boy. Fat boy. Yeah.
Yeah, he goes crazy in the ring. But put like you did he forget to put like something in his boot, or like what
doesn't
was the deal
it.
There?
Why bother?
Just the
Why
notion
bother?
That he's going
wasn't in the WCW budget. Yeah, whoa. You want what's that? You want a piece? You want a napkin to wrap in duct tape and then an athletic tape? No. We can't afford that. Just pretend like you got something. Yeah, that, right. It's once again, even that, this is a match, if they've been selective, it's a match where you can have kind of a smosh finish, because it's a joke match in a lot of ways. It's like a spectacle match, and no one's really concerned about the finish of this match. These two aren't having regular matches. It's not leading to any future feuds or establishing a, you know, pecking order within the roster. So let them do whatever they want here, but it doesn't make any sense, but still have it be logical and make sense, which it doesn't do. But anyway, I still enjoy seeing, especially now going back and seeing Rick being, you know, being Ric Flair, even if it's the parody of Ric Flair, it's still, I don't know, it's still enjoyable for me. So it is what it is. The next match, what we got?
We got Sting versus Goldberg, and this match I was like, is Goldberg babyface? Is he a bad guy? Like, he had already lost. I thought this match was really well worked. Yeah. It was really physical. Bret Hart had to come out and get involved in the end, but other than that, I thought it was a really good match.
Yeah, this is the one. This is the one where I think the big problem with Goldberg is they rush through opponents, the big opponents, too quickly. You look back, and Giant's the one that comes to mind the most for me. They had him beat the Giant, or at least jackknife him on Nitro, just kind of out of the blue, and really killed. I think they could have built and had at least a 3 or 4 month kind of build towards a match with that. And the same thing with Sting is established. I didn't mind having this match end, especially if it hadn't been every other match already and hadn't been, I think you really needed to finish in the main event. But this one not being the main event, I think it's okay to have this end in a question mark a bit and kind of need to revisit and stretch out a Goldberg program a little bit. Because the problem with Goldberg was not only did he – every program he did was a one-month program where he won the pay-per-view match. And there was no real, they never got any length out of anything with him.
Right.
And so even though he was super hot, they never highlighted it. They really should have put everything in the company behind Goldberg, like WWF did, putting everything behind Austin. They need to recognize this is our money ticket, put everything behind him. And the number one featured thing is Goldberg. Instead, even though he was kind of near the top, they still, Hogan was kind of still the main attraction. And other guys worked their way, like Nash, worked their way into the main event when Goldberg was in the upper mid card. So they blew it in that way, but they also blew it in not extending his feud. And so I do think this is the one case, an example of a spot where they kind of did do a good job of setting up an extension of the feud and building towards another feud with Bret. They can transfer over to Bret and then come back to Sting, or work a little further with Sting, and then have the Bret thing.
Yo, you back?
We're back. So I think we both agreed we kind of enjoyed that semi-main event, Goldberg and Sting. And I think that's the one match where I didn't actually mind, like I said, I didn't actually mind the interference as much as they used it to write. It could lead in right from the place on the card, everything. From that storyline, it can draw out the Goldberg storyline, which needed to happen. The main event, I had big issues with the finish. What did you think of what?
The finish was terrible for the main event. The finish was ridiculous, but I actually really liked the work. I thought Paige
versus
hung together pretty well.
Paige at this time, and you know, it wasn't until I read his book that I really started to dislike him because I felt like he was such a self promoter and stuff. But this time, I was a huge Paige fan, and I think. For good reason. He worked really hard. He did put together good matches with everybody. I can't help but be a little, you know, like my own personal bias. I do feel like Nash kind of positioned himself, politicked himself to the top of the card in a way that I don't.
So that always influenced
me when I watch his matches at this time, just knowing that like he wheezed. He didn't in some ways. He was over, but I feel like there were guys that were more over that he kind of got himself in front of. Anyway, the match was fine. The finish was terrible.
Well, I from the match standpoint, okay, yeah. It looked like they put some things together. It looked like they had actually talked it out and gone over some stuff, and it didn't just look like a walk and talk, typical Kevin Nash, super slow, methodical paced match. It was good. It was good work, and they went a pretty long time. So I was pretty pleased with the main event. I remember at the time being in the dome and being like, damn, I didn't want to see Nash win the title for the same reason that you were talking about. Is like, because he kind of maneuvered himself up on top. I like Paige. Paige is a wrestler. He didn't really have the affiliation with the NWO or anything like that. And so I thought
Paige was just more interesting. That storyline of him as champ and just as a character was more interesting to me than Kevin Nash. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this is a match that I think really, either way, it was going to go a clean finish. I think not only because the rest of the card was a mess, but just for a title match, I always want a clean finish, and this one especially. But you're right; it wasn't the typical, especially Kevin Nash match. Is you think of going a certain way, and this one was kind of, they worked hard to avoid the pitfalls of his normal matches. So you're right; it was good up until the end. But on a whole, I think you pointed out to me, and looking back, the finishes, it was a disgrace. The finishes, but at the same time, expecting what I was expecting from a 1999 WCW pay-per-view, I liked it way more than I thought it was going to. I really enjoyed, especially the individual matches. I was surprised by a lot of them. I would have liked to have seen Eddie Guerrero on there. I don't know if he was hurt at the time. But I don't know. On a whole, I thought it was a good show. It's funny that, like, I think at the time, fans were thinking, oh, this is not, WCW isn't as good as it was a year ago or 2 years ago, and really down on the direction of the company. But where it would go in like 5 months from this point, it's like, looking back, be careful what you wish for kind of thing. Cause it definitely could have gotten worse, and did. This wasn't, I mean, the way that the show was being booked and run and written and everything was not bad at this point. So.
Well, there's one other note. Well, so the finish came with Macho Man interfering in the main event. They ring the bell. Nash wins by DQ. Bischoff comes back out and says, I don't care what Harvey Schiller, I don't care what Harvey Weinstein, I don't care what Harvey Keitel says. What we're doing, we're starting this match over again. And so they restarted the match. Then Nash hit the Jackknife Powerbomb, got the 1-2-3, and that was it. And that slamboree went off the air with Nash as your new champion. But, John, I don't know if you know about what the historic reference of this day was.
No, I will say real quick, because it sounds like we're going up. I will say the only good thing about that finish was they did take a good amount of time. The more time after the restart, the more it negates the restart. And they didn't go, at least it wasn't like restart and then immediately the match ends, which was good. But what was the special note about that day?
This was the first time I'd ever met a certain wrestling fan in my life. And I'm going to leave it as a teaser. You're going to have to listen next time to find out on a Grappling Cooperative, because this is it's a story that goes down in infamy. And I'm sure you can remember it if you just think about it. A specific wrestling fan who I ended up giving one of my two tickets away to, and ended up being a persistent person in my life throughout my independent wrestling career. So think about that.
I have a few guesses. We'll see.
You have a few guesses. I'll bet one of them is correct. You've been listening to A Grappling Cooperative, a Comedy Suplex podcast production. You can check out our website, comedysuplex.xyz, last in the alphabet, but first in your hearts. Follow us on all the social media at Comedy Suplex, at Grappling C. John, you got any social media? You got any plugs out there?
Nah.
Don't you have a whole business that you're trying to promote?
Yeah, Breakout Como, come on by, try it. Best escape room in Columbia, Missouri. Can't beat it. Kat, what's your Instagram? Kat Westhoff. Check out my wife's Instagram, Kat Westhoff.
Boom! Tons of nut followers. She's just gonna be blowing up with creepy perverts. Awesome.
Thanks for listening, guys.
All right, Nature Boy. We'll talk to you next time.
See you, Viggity.
Bye.